You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Rob Has a Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Armstrong, and we are here tonight to talk about a dramatic episode of Big Brother Canada 9 on a Wednesday night. Here with me tonight, a very special guest. I'm very happy to be talking to Hira from Big Brother Canada 8. Hira, how are you doing?
Doing good, Taryn. Thank you for having me, and also great meeting both you, Melissa, and Taryn. I'm just very excited to be here because after Big Brother, this podcast and talking with you guys is up there. Like I've always wanted to come here and chat Big Brother with you guys. So thank you for asking me to come.
Of course, man. I'm so happy that you've joined us. Also, of course, with me is Melissa. How you doing, Melissa?
Doing well. Yeah, emotional episode, and it was interesting to see it. You know, kind of play out. I feel worse for Kiefer. Like, I did tell you guys my stream cut out a little bit, so I missed like the veto ceremony of it, unfortunately. But to see like the music and Kiefer crying, and to see, you know, it get broken to him like that was just like, I feel like it was more devastating. I mean, music really affects me, so I feel like that was worse than just watching it on feeds. But you know, it was cool to see it in an episode.
Yeah, I mean, here we are, a Wednesday night episode. Very rarely do we see this kind of dramatic sort of stuff happen on a veto episode, but I'm so glad we got it. I was very worried that they were going to skip over them telling Kiefer beforehand, and then maybe they would show it after, because they didn't want to like ruin the surprise of the veto ceremony. But I'm so glad that they did it the way that they did, because it was just absolutely the right way to do it. It's exactly how it happened on the feeds. They sat Kiefer down about a half hour or so later. The ceremony happened. Kiefer was still in tears at that time. And this has to be one of the most brutal betrayals in at least the history of Big Brother Canada. Certainly is reminiscent of the Pretty Boys chopping Adam here.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking to see a guy that was so loyal to them, which I don't understand why he was so loyal in the first place. But he was so loyal, and to see them bring him into the room and sit him down and give him that whole like spiel, it was just it was savage to take him out or put him up like that. And the water was reminiscent of the whole Pretty Boy situation.
Definitely. And also, I think part of the thing for me is that if I'm Kiefer, I'm not only am I like, oh, they're telling me right now that they're going to put me up, that's a betrayal. I'd be like, okay, so they've been talking about this. Like, this clearly isn't something that's like, oh, okay, random. Like, this is just going to happen right now. It's like, this is something they've gone over. They've talked about it. It's been conversations I've been purposely left out of. Like, this has been in the works. This isn't like a new thing. Clearly, they've talked about like, okay, it's the three of us. We need to get Kiefer out, blah, blah, blah. that alone would make me sad that like people were conspiring against me, you know, the whole time. That would be sad, especially if I thought that like, because Kiefer, in his mind, they're like loyal to the end. It's the Sunsetters all the way. And he's been saying that this whole time. While he's made like little side alliances in his mind and in all his DRs and in everything he's done, it's been all about getting the Sunsetters to the end. And he clearly thought that that's what they were thinking too. And to find out that they weren't on the same page at all, that's got to make you feel a certain way.
It's always the person who has the most amount of pride in the, like the alliance and the name of the mm-hmm. alliance, right? Like, you think back to Matt in the Brigade in Big Brother 12. He was really the one. It certainly wasn't like the guy throwing out nicknames or anything. but he was the one who was like, in some ways, the most loyal to the Brigade, the person who really set them up. Then you had Adam, of course, who named the Pretty Boys, who was the most Pretty Boy focused player there. And he gets chopped. I guess if you find yourself as the person who's like, yeah, this is my alliance, feeling great about this, super loyal to my alliance, you should really start watching your back here.
Yeah, especially after what they showed last episode with him being like, oh, they're not going to, or especially when Tara was saying, oh, they're going to cut you next. And he's like, no way, I'm going to win this game. It just mm-hmm. makes him look so bad. Someone that was just so loyal to them and getting cut like this. You should never be too high on mm-hmm. your alliance. Cause there's going to come a time, especially now it's gotten to about 6-7 people. They're going to become a time that they're going to start thinking about it and you got to start expecting it. So he shouldn't have had those moments. Not like he shouldn't have, but like he shouldn't have been so comfortable. You can never be mm-hmm. too comfortable in that house.
Also, I was just going to say, I also think that like something to note is if you're in a big giant alliance like that and you're not having any side conversations with people in the alliance, like, okay, what's the order once we get to a certain point? Like, who do we need to take out first? Like, if you're not involved in any of those conversations and you're not talking about like, okay, once we get down to the end, who from our alliance goes first? That clearly means you're the one that's going to go first. Like, Kiefer's not having those conversations. He's not like sitting with Jen, Ty, and being like, okay, guys, like we have to take out Beth and then we have to take out Tina. Like that he's not involved in that. And I think that should be telling that you're not on the in group. Like, cause those conversations are going to happen. It's going to happen because you have to be prepared once you get down to the line. And if you're not involved, it's happening around you. It's not that it's not happening at all.
He seems satisfied just being the fourth guy, like being the fourth mm-hmm. person. He just wants to mm-hmm. get to the four. And he truly, I truly believe he's okay with getting to four and being the fourth guy out for some reason. It seems that way.
It's certainly what he's saying on the feeds. So, but yeah, I think part of it too is that, thinking about what I was saying about like, it's always the person most invested in the group, I think the reason there's one person that's more invested in the group is that, that's the person who doesn't have the individual connections within the group, right? Mm-hmm. Like Kiefer is the most group oriented person because the other three have each other, Ty and Jed, yep. Beth and Jed. Those are like solid duos. Kiefer's like us as a group, right, guys? Mm-hmm. Cause he doesn't have that one person. And that's also what makes him the most vulnerable. I think this might be the real Anthony Douglas here in the chat who says the Big Papa is here. And in the Pretty Boys, it was Anthony and Dane. Mm-hmm. And Adam had Sam on the outside. He kind of thought he had Dane, but for Anthony and certainly for Mark, it was very much like, hey, it's the group, guys, but really it was Anthony and Dane. Mm-hmm. Obviously same thing with the Brigade. Matt was the one on the outs in terms of individual connections within the group. Having a group is not enough. We talked about this on Monday. Big Brother is a team game, but it's also an individual game. It's both. And you need to have both. You can't just have the group. It's not enough, Melissa. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the group gets you to a certain point, but that doesn't get you to the end. I mean, a group can't go to the final two. Like that, it just, the group can't win the game. You need to figure out your own connections within the group and without the group as well, or out of the group as well, you know, that can help you personally get to the end. I feel like it's like when you focus on the group getting to the end, you lose sight of the individual game. And I think you need to have both. You need to have, okay, we're here as a group to pick off the people who are not in the group, but I, as an individual, need to have my own personal connections and my own people who would take me to the end. And I feel like that's what a lot of people who get into these big alliances, they get comfortable. They feel like, okay, this alliance is the group. This is it. This is all I need. And they don't have the follow through once you get down to the end game.
Yeah, which is why it's so confusing that he's so loyal to them, because he's part of that group, but he doesn't have those one-on-one, like, true bonds with either mm-hmm. one of the three. Those three have it with themselves. And that's why he's kind of okay with being just the fourth guy out. But that's why I don't understand why he's so loyal to them, because he is the fourth. He already, like, it's clear. He knows it too. So why is he continuing to be so loyal to them for no reason, really?
Plus, also,
I don't know if he will be now, but
if you're the one in the group who's always bringing up, like, best alliance ever, like Sunsetters for life, like all that sort of stuff, like, and no one else is saying that except for when they're like agreeing with you, that's not a good sign. That's got to mean something to you. Like, you should take note and be like, oh, okay, I'm the one who always is talking about the alliance and everyone else is not saying that.
Yeah. Well, we started the episode with Kiefer in a much happier place. He's never felt less nervous in a nomination ceremony than when Jed was standing there and making the nominations. And, things are looking up. They're talking about, we don't like Brayden. He's always sticking around. Maybe we could backdoor Brayden if something happens. And Kiefer's like, all right, let's go. We can backdoor Brayden. That's a great plan. He's excited. He goes and tells Tina. Tina's like, ooh, a backdoor Brayden plan. This is great. And honestly, a perfectly fine plan as well. This is what it seemed like was going to happen for a long time on the feeds. It wasn't until the feeds came back from the veto competition that they were like, but what about Kiefer? It really did happen just that quickly that we saw here in the episode.
Yeah. One thing about Kiefer, he's when he's comfortable, he's very comfortable. So he was sitting in during that nomination ceremony, just chilling. But when he's down, man, he's ready to self evict. Like, he's out the door. But maybe that works for his game in a certain way. Like, people see him so down and out, and they felt some sort of sympathy for him, as we'll talk about later. And
I honestly did not see this coming. Like, I have to say, like, I mean, I knew that, like, eventually, like, I didn't see Kiefer as, like, you know, Kiefer and Jed, like, making it to the final two together or whatever. But I was not expecting this HOH to be so dramatic. I thought that this was an easy week, a boring week. Just like, okay, Tina, Tara, Brayden, one of them's going home. That's it. Like, that would have been the simple thing to do. But, you know, it's exciting the way it's kind of turned out, at least.
Boredom in that house. Yeah. They do crazy things. That's what's happening with that triangle.
All right. Well, we're going to see Tara make a pitch to Beth. She tells us that she thinks that Beth has been playing a very good game. She thinks she has a lot of influence in the house. And so she pitches to Beth that, hey, you need to cut these guys. The other people in the game are going to see they're going to think that you have done nothing. They're going to think that you've been dragged along. They don't see the game that I see from you, Beth. And if you want to stand a chance to win in the end, you need to be sitting next to me. And you know what? I'm okay with getting 20 grand. I understand that that's my fate in this game, but if you want to win, that's your path to the end. And she makes a pretty good pitch here, and Beth seems to really buy into it, Melissa.
I think it makes a lot of sense, but I thought it was funny how it came across where it was like, well, I was looking at it and it seems the only person who will take me to the final two is you. And then Beth just sits there silently and it's like, oh, okay, maybe not. You aren't going to take me? Like, I don't know. I felt like it was weird to just like suggest that. I feel like I might have gone about it in a different way. I think that the reasoning behind it makes sense. I mean, I do think people should be bringing Tara to the end. I think that that would be an easier win than bringing Jed or Ty, obviously. But I do think that the way it was brought about was like, you're going to take me, right? And when she's given like no indication that she was going to take her. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Beth's hearing her. I don't know if, I mean, I guess like, yes, Beth is taking it in, but I do think that like, from what we've heard and seen, it does seem like the trio wants to take each other, which I don't think is a good move at all. I think that they need to be looking elsewhere. I think that an easy way to win is to bring Tina or Tara, maybe Brayden, even if he like can't pull out any wins down the stretch. I just think that the trio, yeah, sure, you know, you bring one of them and it's like, okay, I'm gonna beat the best or whatever to win. And it's like, no, just bring who you think you can beat. Bring who you can beat because you want to win.
Yeah, I think Tara's pitch there was good in the sense that it really gets Beth to start thinking 2 weeks, 3 weeks down the line and think about what's really best for her game. Even though she has been, you know, they've been showing on the episode that she's been thinking about it, that she doesn't want to be carried to the end by the boys. But it's like planting a seed, and Tara really does a good job with planting a seed there for Beth. Like, is it beneficial for you to take those guys to the end or stick with them? You're going to soon have to cut them. So why are you playing into their game? So it's just making her, it just makes Beth as a player kind of double think, kind of have a little paranoia in her mind. So it was good. I'm glad Tara is playing the game now a little bit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we hear from Beth that she might need to cut those guys before the end. And she says that she wants credit for the influence she has had on the game. She has had the most influence on this game, and nobody gives her credit for it. And here's the thing about that, because just last night I talked about how I do not think it's fair that we put all the pressure on Beth to have to cut Jed when Jed's not going to cut Beth, right? And I stand by that statement. But when Beth says that she's had the most amount of influence in the game, more so than Jed or Ty, I do have to give her the like, all right, Beth, like, yeah. You're a little high on your own sauce right now, because exactly what influence do you think that you've had in this game? Like,
she's been HOH for 2 weeks straight. That's she's on a high horse right now. That's what's going on. Since her HOH getting Vic out, she's just been like on a high and just talking all this smack to the cameras, which has brought her a lot of hate from the fandom. But I think she's doing all right. But I also do not think Jed is not going to cut her. I think Jed. Is that what you said, Taryn? You don't think he's going to cut her?
I don't think Jed will cut Beth now.
I was going to say the opposite of that. Yeah, I think he could cut her. I have a feeling.
Really?
I think he's going to stay. If it's them three at the end, I think he will pick Ty over Beth. I have a feeling. But anyways.
It's certainly possible. Certainly possible.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of Beth's influence, it's just like, you know, Week two, I think that's maybe one of the more influential weeks she had, where she helped make the mistake of evicting Josh over Ro, because she wanted to hang out with Ty and Jed. Then week three, she had zero influence over Victoria. It's HOH, and you know, player A nearly hit the block that week. If not for some other things that went down, week four, she couldn't influence Kiefer to stop doing the right thing for her own game, by making a deal with Kyle and Ro. Week five, she had no influence over Vic's HOH as the invisible HOH. Week six, she was the HOH, and she did finally make a move, and that was her most impressive week, except she waffled back and forth so many times and basically made it a group decision because of how often they went back and forth. And then obviously she didn't influence Kiefer to go after Roe. That was always Kiefer's thing. So like exactly what influence has she had? Kiefer is the one that pulled Vic to their side. It's the guys who had Keef on their side. And then the guys that kept Vic loyal on their side. Like, the guys have had more influence than you, Beth. That's actually true. And you don't even have that much influence over the guys, because every time you try to push for something, you roll right over after they go, oh, what about this? So that's my problem here, Beth, with saying that you have this much influence.
Yeah, I don't think we're in a situation where there's like a Cody Calafiore like person running the game. I don't think that's the case here at all. I think that like, yeah, I think that the her getting Victoria out was, you know, a big move. Yes. And she did have influence over that. But I don't know if you can really say that anything else has really, she's really had influence over anything, possibly this move, but you know, it doesn't come off that way necessarily, because when, first of all, Jed's HOH, so like, it's always going to come down to him. Second of all, you know, even when she goes to tell Kiefer that this is going on, she's like, let me get the boys. Like, let's have the boys up here and let's let Jed explain this decision to you, because I don't know, I'm not involved. And so it really doesn't seem like she's that involved. And I also think perception is reality. So whatever the jury sees that she's doing, whether it's behind the scenes or not, she's not coming across as that influential. So I think that the jury is then not going to see that. If she's purposely making it so that these decisions look like group decisions, or that these decisions come off as like, look, I wish I could have helped you in this situation, but there was nothing I could have done, then it doesn't come across that you're the one making the move. It's like the jury won't think that in the end. And that's what matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think all her hype talk and her chat with the cameras got her really like, it pumps her up to like, feel like, oh, I'm running this game. Mm-hmm. I have a say in every move that's happening. But at the end of the day, whenever all those group conversations are happening, it's from what I've seen on the live feed, it seems like Jed is leading a lot of them, like especially when it's a tough conversation with people outside of the Sunsetters or outside of their alliance. So she's not going to be perceived as the person that led that alliance if they get to the end, which is how the cookie crumbles for her. But like, I think it's just all to Kiefer. He hypes himself up too much and he says things like, oh, I could be the greatest game player in Big Brother history. This is the greatest alliance or whatever else. I think all that stuff kind of gets to your own head in there, and they feel that way, but mm-hmm. it's not the case.
Yeah. And we're even going to hear from her a little bit later in the episode when Jed says, what if I put up Keef? And she's completely surprised. And she says, whoa, this is great. And tells us in the diary room, this is exactly what I wanted. I've been planting seeds for weeks, which like is kind of fair, but she's ignoring the fact that for the last few days, she had been pushing hard for Brayden to go. Didn't work at all for Kiefer to get backdoored. And this clearly was entirely Jed's idea, but
yep.
This is the, I think, perceived influence that she thinks she has over the game. If Jed had said, okay, we're backdooring Brayden, she would have gone, boom, my work over the last few days has worked. He says, no, let's do Kiefer. And she goes, boom, my work over the last few weeks has worked. Like, yeah. All right, Beth. Which is it?
Which also, it's not good for her to have Brayden leave this week. Like, she should be working Brayden and have him be her parachute. I don't know what she's doing. I feel like it doesn't make any sense to me why she would want Brayden to leave. Like, I don't get it. Just because she's like annoyed with him. Like, okay, who cares? This is a game. Deal with it.
Yeah, it's like anything changes in a morning. Like, it's like the moment they see someone does not say good morning to you, it's like, okay,
this person it's a big thing in the Big Brother house.
Yeah, this is huge. Like, you're feeling like that person is not. Oh, they're being stuck up to you or something, and then you get annoyed at them, and then boom, you want them out. It's just,
yeah, then it's over for them. Little,
yeah, that's what that is. And then when the moment Jed mentioned Keef to her, like, hey, potentially putting Keef up, she's the type of player, from what I see, like, she gets so excited over these big moves or like these crazy like things that you don't expect. So she got so excited and pumped, and she's like, yeah, I'm on board with this, and then she's like, this is what I've been planting seeds for the last couple of weeks. So again, it's just pumping herself up, and it's not the real true reality. It's just her perception.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're going to get to this veto competition. Brayden is the only person not drawn for it. And Jed says, thank the BB gods that Brayden is not drawn, because at this point, he's still backdooring Brayden. How exciting, Melissa. We are going to have a TikTok challenge where they are going to compete in various TikTok challenges, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know much about TikTok, to be honest, but I was hoping for something more exciting than just like stacking blocks. I don't know. I feel like there could have been more to it. I've heard about TikTok for dancing. I thought maybe they'd make them dance and do things like that. Didn't quite get that. And then they had to like change measurements or something. I don't know. That stuff is not for me.
Yeah.
There weren't any TikTok dances going on. I the only TikTok related was the label of TikTok on the background there. But I like the ping pong throwing part.
That was the best part of this. So the first part is they have to stack blocks blindfolded, which was not super exciting to watch. And then the second part was that they were searching for numbers and they had to do math, but I don't think they told us what the math was. Like, I don't remember hearing what I'm supposed to, like, I couldn't play along.
Yeah, I don't know the math at all. So I just like sat there waiting for that part to be over.
Yeah, they were like, the numbers are the easy part, but the math is the hard part. And I was like, I don't know the numbers, so I can't do the math.
Like, I don't know the numbers or the math.
So I'm just watching them go around this big pit of things and put random numbers there. And I don't even know which ones are right. And it's just like,
oh, my sweet merciful God.
Oh, man.
Not for the audience, that's for sure.
I was expecting, me and my wife were watching it, we were expecting Tara to really kill that the measurement one, because, you know, she's a stay-at-home mom, she should know these conversions and whatnot. Like, I thought she would do well, and she did. I'm also very disappointed in Ty. Like, he has really been disappointing me in these comps. I'm just surprised.
I don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill.
Ty's great. He's great at these competitions.
He's really flopping hard for these comps.
He really has been. True. I mean, we talk about the trio as a big threat, but Ty really has only won one competition. So we'll see. We finally get to the third part of the competition, and it's Tina and Tara left. And I'm just like, where is this energy in any HOH competition, Tina and Tara? Like, you guys have needed an HOH competition win for so long in this game, and now you're the top two players in a veto competition where you're both on the block. Like, that's your time to peak, really. I love the contrast of this versus like the Big Brother Canada 5 version that was an HOH competition that was like much more physical. And it came down to Dimitri, Kevin, and Bruno. It was an epic competition, but like, much more equal in terms of letting anybody have a chance at winning it. And I love that Tina and Tara are the top two competitors in this veto competition. And getting to, which I agree, the best part of it, which was trying to bounce the ping pong ball off of the little platforms. Very visual. You could see them getting close every time. I love this part, Melissa.
Yeah, that was definitely the highlight. I felt like, it's one of those things where it's like, it kind of requires skill, kind of not. Like, you don't have to be super physical or anything, but like, to calculate how you should bounce it or like how hard or whatever to get it in there, I feel like it's tricky, but it's doable. And I liked that we could watch the progress as it goes down and be like, nope, it's not in. And then they move to the next person and it's like, you watch their ball go down and then, nope, not in. I liked that part the best. It was easier to follow. Like, I like the competitions where, as like the viewer, you can see what's happening, versus like, you know, where they're stacking stuff or they're like doing math in their heads. It's like, okay, I don't know what's going on right now. I don't know who's in the lead. We'll just have to wait and see.
I also thought it kind of, if I really stretch here, it's sort of the different approaches that Tina and Tara had kind of make me think about the approaches that they have in the game. Tina mentioned that The competition was all about trying to throw the ball the exact same way every time, so that when you adjusted the panels, it would go in perfectly, right? Whereas we saw Tara, she was just throwing the ball like in a different way every time, trying to figure out which way would work best. And that's kind of been Tina's like approach, mm-hmm. right? Tina waits for everything to be lined up. She wants it to be perfect, and she tries to remain calm and cool and even throughout the game. Whereas Tara just throws whatever will stick against the wall. And lets, you know, the environment is the environment. And I do feel like in this competition, at least, Tara's approach was better because, it takes a lot longer to go and reset the, or change the angle of the boards themselves. So if you can change the angle of your throw, that you can do that much more quickly than trying to have the exact same throw and then change the boards every time. So, ultimately we are going to see Tara win this veto.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my sweet, merciful God.
Tara, I love how she just like runs around in circles afterwards. It was like you couldn't stop her. She was just like running around the whole place. Finally, Tina just like grabs her and hugs her.
Yeah. Tina is going to have to hope that the sweet, merciful Big Brother God is going to keep her safe this week.
Yeah. I wish we'd see more of Tina. Like, I thought it would come out soon, like the last week or this week, but we haven't seen much of Tina. And I'm, again, another player that I've been a bit disappointed about that hasn't really, shown up to play the game as much as they could be doing right now, especially at this time when you're on the block. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't that fire in her. Even before when she got nominated, it showed on the episode, she just seemed like one keeper came up to her and be like, oh, Bray is the backup or the backdoor nominee potential. And she was just like, okay, cool with it. And just, I think she really believed it and she was just comfortable with that. She's okay with staying on the block as long as somebody else goes in, which is what the case might be, but now it's turned on her.
Yeah, we talked about this on the roundtable last night, but basically like when you start out the season, there are always going to be like these strong players that are like very low key players that are like in a good position and they seem to be intelligent and they seem to be like on the right page. But they're kind of just like very even keel and just like not doing much, kind of laying low. And the tricky thing is like, are they the type of player who's laying low on purpose so that way halfway through the game, they can turn it on and just kick it into gear and like go for it? Or are they the kind of player that's laying low because that's just all they're doing is laying low and they don't have the ability to actually turn it on when needed. And they're just kind of going to coast through the game. We would kind of hoped that Tina would be the type that is laying low on purpose and doing all this stuff because she knows that in the beginning, you know, you're supposed to lay low. And then she's going to kick it into high gear. But that second part has never happened for her. We're kind of just seeing her do the same thing the whole time and kind of just riding this same position the entire time. And it's disappointing because, you know, you want to see the type of player that can turn it on halfway through. And I was kind of hoping that would be Tina, but so far we're not seeing it. And I don't know if we are going to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can relate to that too. Like from our short season, like my strategy was to not like go in there and make too much noise. That's what I was trying to do until I got put up week one as a pawn. But then even though I was a pawn, I went to people right away, even before the veto. Like, I'm like, oh, you gotta work. You gotta fight. You're here. One chance. You'll probably never get this again. So you would think once a low-key player gets their chance to actually play the game, they would play it. And it's just disappointing when you don't see that happen. So I see the strategy of people laying low-key because that's what I wanted to do as well. But you got to turn it on at a certain point. Like, otherwise, you're just okay with just being there. And I'm not okay with that.
Yeah. And I've said this before, but at the end of the day, it really does come down to being able to win competitions as well. And that just hasn't, unfortunately, been something that she's been able to do. Here, you're actually a great example that I always think of when I think about, like, you started the game and you were put on the block very quickly. And it really could have been a situation where, like, uh-oh, you know, now that once you're used as a pawn once, it's very easy to continue to like sort of pigeonhole somebody in that role. But you won vetoes, and winning those vetoes, winning competitions gives you the platform you need to jump off and really start to have credibility in the game again. And you were able to bounce back from a position that most people aren't able to. And winning those comps was a huge part of it for sure. But you know, in Tina's position, when she's not able to win anything, it's tough, and she has not been able to overcome it. Tara, with just this one veto win, has already sort of advanced her position socially a little bit in the house, because you know, competition wins are power. Winning begets power, both in the rules of the game and also in the social structure of the game. It's very interesting.
Winning gets people to come to you instead of you having to go to people to start conversations, and that's what I noticed. I'm like, the moment I won the veto, like, people started coming to, hey, maybe we should work with this guy. Maybe we should actually take him seriously about this. So I made it clear that I don't want to be a pawn. I never came here to be a pawn. So that made people come to me and start conversations instead of me going to other people, which sometimes is much harder to do. If you're going to people, multiple people, to try to just have something stick, you're just throwing darts in the dark to have somebody come back to you in a line. But when you start winning, people realize, okay, this person could be a very integral part of our group, and we want him to be part of our group for at least until at some point of the game. So it does help socially, and also, you know, keeping yourself safe.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So Tina does give Kiefer some good insight here. She says, you want to lay off all the jokes about how you're going to win this game, Keef. You know, it's maybe it's something that you should stop doing. But Kiefer, not worried. It's hey, you know what? Kiefer,
just call me the Grim Kiefer.
Kiefer's the Grim Kiefer. He doesn't need to worry about this. I'm not too worried. She says, well, don't say I didn't warn you.
Yep. He should be worried.
Kiefer's the goat. They pump him up too much. You know, he's sitting comfortable at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, I feel like you should always be a little worried. Like, I get that, like, you shouldn't just constantly be concerned that you're going on the block and like questioning everybody. But like, you should never feel comfortable in the Big Brother house. That's just like, everybody says that. It's the way that, like, if you start to feel comfortable, you sit back more, you relax, and you aren't looking for signs and you aren't picking up on things. And like, that's where you have a problem. So, you know, you should never be too comfortable, and Kiefer's too comfortable.
Yeah. The moment you feel comfortable, you stop also making those social connections, or like building further on the social game. You just sit back and you think your alliance, in this case, Kiefer thinks his alliance is just going to carry him this week. And he sat back and it backfired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here, I think your video has frozen. I don't know if you can like turn it off and then on again, maybe, if that would help. But either way, we can still hear you fine. So that's the important thing.
Am I moving now or still frozen?
Mm-mm. Still frozen, yeah.
Try turning off your video and then like doing stop video and then try and turn it back on, maybe.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
See if you can do that. Hey, I'm here now.
So Melissa has become here. Yeah, still not working. I don't know why. I can fix it.
Ah. Nah, Melissa.
Do you see me at least when I stop the video? There you are.
Okay. All right. Good. Perfect. There you go. All right. So Ty is going to come into the HOH room and Jed is going to say, what do you think? Ty's like, it's time to pull the trigger. And Jed's like, on who? Raiden. And Jed says, what if we pulled the trigger on Keith? And,
We could, couldn't we?
We could, couldn't we?
Oh, my sweet, merciful God.
Oh, no.
Yikes.
He's like, we could. He is the strongest player in the game. Oh, Jed. Oh, man.
Woo!
Oh!
Woo! Yeah. Big move. That's a big move.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's like the right move necessarily, but I mean, honestly, Kiefer is a competitor. He wins a lot and he has a lot of friends in the jury and elsewhere. Like, I just feel like people respect his game. So like, it is a move. Is it the right move now? That's the question. Is like, normally I would say, absolutely, get this guy out right now. He's a strong threat. He's, you know, a threat to your winning the game. But at the same time, it's Kiefer and he is beyond loyal to these guys. And I feel like that's why I'm a little iffy on this decision, just because he's so loyal. Like, he wants to take those guys to the end. He wants them to win. Like, he wants the four of them to go to the end and probably the three of them if we're taking out Beth. I think Kiefer wants to go to the end with Ty and Jed. And I think he'd be happy if they won. Like, obviously he wants to win, but I do think that he would be happy if it was the three of them at the end and one of them went, like one of them won. Yeah. So to me, it's questionable only because he is so loyal in that way. Whereas like any other situation, I'd be like, this guy's really good. You got to get him out. But I wonder if it's too early in this situation.
Well, I mean, especially for Ty, because at this point, mm-hmm. Ty has been doing a lot of work with Kiefer, and Kiefer has been talking about how he might take a shot at Beth and Jed, but Ty is the one that will be with them, you know, and he's been protecting Ty with Tara and Tina, telling them, hey, Ty is not the person to take out. So the fact that Ty is so excited.
We could, couldn't we?
Good. I don't know if it's the right move for Jed. I do feel like there is a lot of potential reward to this move in particular, because I do think that there comes a point in the game where you just need to start taking out your threats. Like, I think about Cody and Big Brother 22. And, Danny leaves at Final 7. He takes the shot at Tyler at Final 6. And, you know, there were people that were like, it's too early to take a shot at Tyler. Tyler's still working with the guys. He needs Tyler as a shield. He needs Tyler to win competitions for him. But, you know, in the end, it was best to just take out these threats. There comes a point where you just need to get rid of them, especially when Tyler is somebody who can win the jury votes in the end. And we know that Kiefer can win those jury votes in the end here.
I do not think it's a good move, because so they got someone who's so loyal to them. They voted to evict this guy and he's still so loyal to you. And you got to think about next week's HOH. So you take out Kiefer, your next week's HOH, you're going two of your people versus three of their guys. But if you keep Kiefer, you got three of your people, because you know, before all this happened and Kiefer doesn't have this thought that these guys are potentially taking him out, if you keep Kiefer, you have three of your people going for the HOH and you have two of their people, the other side, going for the HOH. All right. Is it three? No, two, because you're going to take out one. So it's three versus two for you versus having three against your two. if you take Kiefer out. And Kiefer is a guy, I think, like, you can take your chances at taking Kiefer out at the top four. Like, it's three of you, the triangle, the sauce. You can get Kiefer out at top four. So I think it's a bad move to take him out right now, or before we know what we know, but bad move to take him out because he's so loyal to you and he will go to the four with the final four with you three.
Yeah, it is risky though. You know, Kiefer, probably of the other four players in the game, Kiefer is probably the best at competitions, especially the kind of end game competitions that we are likely to see. And so, you know, taking Kiefer to four as opposed to somebody like Tina, who, you know, is much less likely to win those end game comps, it's definitely risky. It's definitely going to, you know, potentially take control of your fate out of your hands. So I think at the very least there are some arguments either way. But can we talk about the hide and seek game?
Oh, we could, couldn't we?
We could. Okay, let's do it then.
We could.
Let's do it. Let's talk about it. So somebody is going to have to sleep in the ball pit. Now, I feel like this sounded much worse.
Yeah, I feel like sleeping
you saw it.
In the ball pit is different than sleeping over the ball pit.
Yeah, my question is, why haven't they been sleeping in there all season? Like, that's the have-not room. They should be sleeping in there as have-nots.
It is very strange.
I thought they, like, were going to make them sleep in there. Like, I'm so shocked that that wasn't part of it.
Yeah, I'm, like, so jealous. Like, we had the swamp, and these guys do not even have any have-not room. That room is a fun room. You get to throw ball around, play catch, do whatever you want. Like, this is...
that's not so a punishment.
It's not. It's a fun room.
Yeah. So the way they're going to determine this is that Jed and Tara, both being safe this week, HOH and veto holder, will be seeking. The other players who will be hiding. The person who is found last will then choose who will be sleeping in the ball pit. And I felt like this played out in such a fitting way for this season, where the winner of this competition was Beth, who is the person who had her first two choices for spots already taken. She went to go hide where Brayden was hiding in the HOH room. She was like, oh, I was going to hide there. Had to run to the bedroom where she tried to hide basically exactly where Tina was. And Tina was like, hey, this is my blanket. And so she had to just panic and default into a pile of clothes, which ended up being the best hiding spot. And she wins this game.
Yeah. Very impressive. Good hiding and seeking. Or good Beth, hiding, really.
Yes.
Beth will use that in the final two if she gets there.
Exactly. And also fitting is that Ty almost wins this competition just by getting naked and hanging out outside.
Why did he get naked? I don't get it. It's cold outside. It's Toronto, man. Why did he get cold? Why did he get naked? But from what I've seen in the live feed, I think he's a fan of being naked.
What happened probably is that he was running around. He's like, production, can I take my clothes off? And they were like, yeah, you can. He's like,
oh, we can't, couldn't we?
There it is.
That soundbite is dangerous. You're just going to use that for everything now.
Everything.
Oh, we could.
It's so good.
Any opportunity he gets a chance to take his clothes off, he's doing it.
Exactly. And every opportunity, anytime I'm able to, anytime we can use this soundbite.
Oh, we could, couldn't we?
We could use the soundbite.
Good.
So,
it's a pretty good one.
Beth wins hide and seek, and she picks Ty to go and sleep in the have not ball pit. And they kind of play this all. Oh, it's pranks. Oh, pranks going on. But Beth says the real reason in the diary room, which is if there's going to be a secret power in there based on this, I would like for it to go to one of my allies, which absolutely smart. Correct call. Yeah. Yes, this is great that they're thinking of that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Very strategic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. At first, I was like, wait, why would she pick Ty? Like, I thought she was just, like, trying to be nice to the other, like, the nominees and everybody. And then it was like, that makes sense. Good call.
Yeah, you're definitely a good call. Yeah, I never think about that stuff. And that was, I should, but that was a good call. Definitely a good call.
Yeah. So, I mean, And really, it's not that bad. Ty doesn't.
I don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill
because this is basically a mountain on some balls. it's just a normal bed, and he gets a room to himself.
Mm-hmm.
It seems better than a regular bed.
Yeah.
It's the twin mattress. He's doing well. Man. He can't even fall off. He has the guardrails there.
Yeah, he's fine.
Even if he falls, it's in the balls. He's fine. I gotta say though, that twin mattress is not comfortable though. I just gotta say that. I slept on it for the first week. It was not comfortable.
Yeah. Is that a different one than the normal mattresses?
Yeah, the normal ones are all doubles. The twin is they only have the twin when in the beginning when there's so many people, so there's like that extra
single bed.
It's a spring bed. It's not comfortable. So I get that part, but he'll be fine. It's only one day too, I think, right? Or is the whole week?
Yeah, it's only a few days, really. Okay. And also like when you are the size of Ty, you probably don't want to be in a bed that small.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, they're going to talk some more about the Kiefer situation that we're going to have to make to Kiefer's going to have to go. Ty, he explains it really well here. He says,
Kiefer's our bestie, but he's not in the sauce.
And that's just it. Kiefer is their bestie, but he's not in the sauce. Just the way it goes. So they're going to break it to Keith. Kiefer is talking to Beth and he's like, it's not me, right? And she's like,
she's just silent. Just like, it's
like, it's me.
That's a very sneaky move by Beth to kind of like break it to him first, like formally, because she wants to get some sort of the jury management vote there by being the one that was honest to Kiefer. So that was very sneaky on her. But then right away she goes, runs and gets the boys. They're like, I can't have this conversation. So
I feel like she could have done. Yeah. Like, I feel like it was a good move, but I feel like she could have done more with it. I feel like it's like, if you're going to be the one to break it to him, like maybe do more than just stand there silently and be like, I'm going to get the real decision makers here. Like, I don't know. It just seems like, she could have done a little bit more there to kind of like make her look better. Whether it's like, I mean, look, at that point when you're telling the person, it's like, you either need to be like, I'm going to take credit for this one, so I get the credit for getting you out, or I'm going to make myself look good by showing that, look, this wasn't my decision. I don't want you to leave, and make it so that is that the perspective of the person. But I feel like just standing there and then being like, let me get the guys is not quite the best mode.
Yeah,
and it didn't seem planned either. So like the boys can use this as something like, hey, why did she, like, that's something I would think about if I was the boys. Like, why did she just pop this up to Keith and then just pull us in?
It like, we're not prepared for this conversation. Yeah, exactly. Like, they're not prepared. They don't know what's coming. And she's just like, yeah, he wants to talk now. Like, I already, he knows. I talked to him. It's like, oh, okay. So you didn't even let us be the ones to, like, decide how we're going to break this to him.
Yeah, well, I don't think she intended to tell him. I don't think she intended to do this in any strategic way. I think that they had meant to tell Kiefer the night before, and they had kind of been putting it off. And so this is now like, probably an hour and a half before the veto ceremony, and they still haven't told him, and he's now asking her, and she was just kind of like, ugh, I can't lie. But she didn't want to be in that position. So she just ran to get the guys, so that they would have to do it instead. And so of course, she runs, she's like, you guys need to talk to Keith. We're doing it. And Ty's like, now I'm in the middle of cooking.
Literally in the middle of cooking.
Yeah, he's flipping pancakes and she just calls him out. Like,
yeah.
Not a good timing. Mm-hmm.
So they run upstairs, they break it down to Keith, and oh boy, Keith, it's gotta be you. And he starts crying. It hurts. It hurts. We went over this on the live feed update. We just saw it on the show. I love that they put this here. It's very dramatic. You know, Kiefer gets up and leaves. He goes and sobs to Tina and Tara. Jed, Ty, and Beth start sobbing. It's very, very sad. And then we head over to the veto ceremony where Jed says, loyalty to everyone means loyalty to no one, Keith. And so you got to take a seat. And he's still crying because this happens very quickly. And
that's it's so sad.
A brutal sequence of events here.
So sad.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I haven't been too much of too high on Kiefer. I know Anthony Douglas has been high on Kiefer. I haven't been too high on Kiefer, so I'm not too saddened by this or hurt by this. It's entertaining. I like it. But what's happening next is more crazy.
It's definitely it is high drama. Which I think is very good. Like, you don't get these raw moments that often in Big Brother, and so get one is so interesting. We also, you know, Tara having the veto says she wants to honor her Big Brother by saving herself with the veto on the anniversary of his death. I'm very happy that she had that moment because I know it was really important to her. But what an episode here. I really approve of, you know, forecasting the fact that it's going to be Kiefer before the actual ceremony happens, because we don't need to be in suspense when it happens. Mm-hmm. We can be sitting there, we're like, oh my God, he's doing it. Like, that's a much better feeling in that moment than the usual, like, I guess I don't know what's going on. What an episode. What a great
episode.
Plus, I
also think if he's crying, like, I feel like if they just showed the veto ceremony and he was like crying and it's like, oh, why is he crying? What's going on? Like, I feel like it's so much better to like know going into it and then see that he's still emotional about it. I mean, that makes you feel a certain way that you're watching this guy cry and he knows what's coming and he just has to sit there like that. That means something. And I do feel like this episode was really good. And I always loved like the raw emotion stuff. Like when it's real on Big Brother, like you've got to love it. I at least I do.
Yeah. And I don't think you have to feel bad for Kiefer, but you can, like, anyone can relate to feeling betrayed and feeling hurt and feeling like you had something and it just got ripped away from you just like that. And your best friends are putting you up on the block and they feel terrible about it too. And everyone feels, but you can relate to the Sunsetter. You can relate to the trio, the sauce, in terms of like, this is the best move for our game. We have to do it and we feel so bad to do this. There's so much emotion in it. And that's what I really find compelling. And I'm really glad that they leaned into it in the right way. I thought this was a great episode.
Yeah, and I don't think you have to be sad because you love Kiefer and want him to stay.
Exactly.
Like, I think you can feel emotions and feel sad because you're watching this thing happen and you're seeing these people feel these emotions. Like, that, at least that's to me what I feel like. I'm not sitting there like, oh my God, I don't want Kiefer to leave. You know, it's like, it's about the game, but at the same time, it's like, these are real emotions. These are people who are really feeling these things, really like just totally invested in this game and they want to win. But there are emotions and feelings involved, and that's great to see. I mean, it's human.
Yeah, the sad part that got me was when they were breaking it to him, and he just accepted, and he's just like, "It's okay, guys." Like, it was just like he was just defeated at that point, and I felt bad about that. Like, and then they hugged him out, and then when he left, they all cried. It was that's definitely emotional. And also, I think they showed it the way they did because of the fact that Kiefer was crying that whole morning before the veto ceremony. And you could see also Ty had looked like he had watery eyes too. So it was hard for them to show that veto ceremony without showing that what happened before that when they broke it to him. So great episode though, yeah.
All right. Well, that's what we have from the episode. We are now going to get into some spoilers from the feeds. So if you want to bounce out now, this is your opportunity. This is where you can do it if you want to.
Oh, we caught, couldn't we?
But yeah, if you want to, here's the thing. You might not always want spoilers, but if you do want spoilers, you can have some.
Oh, we caught, couldn't we?
Either way.
Woo!
So.
Soundboard abuse.
This is what we've got. Thank you guys for joining if you are going to bounce out now, but here are some spoilers.
The Office of Civil Defense has issued the following message. This is
a spoiler
warning.
A spoiler.
Warning means that an actual
spoiler
against this country has been detected and that protective action should be taken.
All right. Okay. Well, it's Kiefer has been backdoored. It's not looking good.
Just call me the Grim Kiefer.
Because he's walking out the door, except this is the triangle we're talking about. This is the trio that we're talking about. They don't do things without thinking about them. Kiefer, as of right now, is staying in the game. They have changed their minds.
Crazy.
Kiefer spoke to Jed. He said, I am better for your game. I will take you to the final two. Jed said, I never said I was sending you out. We could still change this. Kiefer said, if you think about it, the bigger move is to put me up and not send me home. And Jed went, that's a good point. This is the big move. Put you up and not send you home. They have all spoken.
That's not it.
And Kiefer, as of right now, is staying in the game. I talked about how Cody sent out Tyler at 6. Do you remember when Cody changed his mind after telling Tyler that sending him home?
Oh,
and then went,
yeah.
Actually, wait a minute, Tyler. I've changed my mind. You're going to stay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a classic
great
thing.
Great. I mean, classic. Obviously, that's what got
classic
Cody to win.
Strategy. Yeah. We love it. No.
How is that a bigger move? I don't understand where Jed can believe that.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we can walk into the HOH room right now and convince these guys that HOH room is red.
Exactly.
Like, I guess it's like it's a bigger move in that it's like it's shocking. It's like maybe more shocking that you like put him up and then choose not to do it. But it doesn't. The ultimate result is not a bigger move. The ultimate result is that nothing has changed. Like, yeah. It's like, it doesn't make any sense.
I have the exact moment from the feeds where Kiefer convinced Ty to keep him. He said, Ty, you know, you could keep me.
Oh, we caught him.
No.
There he goes. Oh, that was it. He got him.
No, that's no, Taryn. Soundboard abuse. I am calling this a violation. Soundboard.
I could see Ty definitely reacting that way when Keith does say that.
And then that's the end of it. He's just like, oh, I'm convinced we could. And let's do it.
Yeah, this is a big move for Kiefer and nobody else. Like,
no, it is. Yeah. You're right. Honestly, like, this is huge for Kiefer. Like, he could use this. Like, if he gets down to the end, he can be like, I was out the door.
Yes. If they're worried about, hey, Keith has played the best game, as they say, from anyone else remaining, this just adds to his resume. And this is a bigger move for him, not Jed, Ty, Beth, nobody. Like, this is a huge move for Kiefer. And, like, props to him for somehow getting them back on board. Like, it's crazy. It's just mind-blowing.
Yeah. It's not... The reason it's not the bigger move to keep Kiefer after putting him on the block is that by keeping Kiefer after putting him on the block, you are admitting that you have already made a massive error and had to correct it by keeping him. Or the jury is going to see, oh, you made a massive error in changing your mind and keeping him. Mm-hmm. Either way, you have definitely made at least one big error in judgment. There is literally a no-win scenario here. You can't have made the right call in putting him up and also made the right call in keeping him.
Right. Because at least if you make a decision and stick to it, you can argue that that's the right move. Like, you can create an argument that that's the right move, and like possibly people will believe you, possibly they won't, but like at least you can throw that argument out there. But if you sit there and say, yeah, I made this decision and then I went back on this decision and it was the right move, it's like, well, okay, so then you're saying that you made the right move once but the wrong move once as well. So like, what's going on here? It's not a good move for them to go back on it. Once you put him up, once you make that decision, you got to follow through, because in a normal situation, obviously this one's a little different because we'll explain, but it's in a normal situation, you burn someone like that, an ally of yours, you tell them this is happening, you put them on the block, and then you decide, oh, actually, we're going to keep them. That ally is not coming crawling back to you, and you're going to be in trouble with them. Like that, they will know what betrayal feels like, and they will not trust you anymore. Obviously, in this situation, seems a little different because Kiefer seems to be like, yeah, no, I want to be loyal to you guys, like Sunsetters to the end. If you keep me, I'll be loyal. And isn't just saying that. It does kind of, he is making indications that that is the truth, which, like, bad move on Kiefer's part. Like, sure, you say it all you want and then they keep you and then you turn around and betray them because they betrayed you. And, you know, now it's your turn. But, you know, I don't know. It's crazy. I can't believe this is even happening. It just, as crazy as it was that they put him on the block and it was like, oh my God, what a big move. This is even crazier to like keep him around. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I do not think, I don't see how this can benefit them. This is comparable to how earlier in the season, when this was LaToya's downfall, eventually, when she was flip-flopping and then last minute trying to flip the vote on Rohan, when Rohan and Josh were on the block, and it got around to the whole house and they realized she's the one who was double-minded, and it came back to bite her in the ass when Victoria was HOH and got her out because of that flip-floppiness, wishy-washiness. And then also, a week ago when Vic was on the block during Beth's HOH, weren't these guys also so close to reversing their mind on keeping Vic too?
Yep.
And I, like, this is funny because I tweeted about them, like, the moment, if you flip on flop, flop never forgets. Like, like if flop forgets you, flop is an idiot, you know, like you will the keeper should never forget about this. And if he goes back and still says is loyal to these guys, I'd be baffled. Like that would be an even worse move on Kiefer's end. So the Kiefer cannot forget about this. If they happen to save him, he has to go after them after this because they already thought about it. So the moment that idea has been thrown out, you better follow through with that idea, otherwise right. It's going to backfire on you big time.
Just right.
Like, yeah. We've seen it happen. Like you guys, like these guys experienced it. Why are they not learning from the mistake that their fellow alliance made? So weird.
Yeah. We said this on the roundtable last night too, that like the right time to question whether this is the right or wrong move is before you tell him you're going to do this. After you tell him you're going to do this, like all bets are off. You've already done it. You've already made the move. You already set the pieces in motion. You've already made your choice. And then once you've done that, like going back on it just makes you look bad. It makes you look bad to him, to Kiefer. It makes you look bad to the jury because it shows that you're indecisive and that you don't, you know, follow through with your moves. Like it's all bad. And it's just, this is not the time to question it. It's just really not. Like it's too late.
Yeah. It's definitely an interesting move, not one that I'm overly surprised that they are making given last week and really the entire season. But here we are, Kiefer staying in the game. And now we're going to be looking back at Kiefer. And if Kiefer wins next week and doesn't target the trio, we're going to be like, what is this guy doing?
Mm-hmm.
Because he knows that he's in a position where, surely they take the shot at five. If they're choosing between Kiefer and Tara at the final five, surely they're going to evict Kiefer at that point rather than let him break them up at four, where he certainly wins at least one of those competitions because he is very good at those questions. I mean, are they really? I'm sure they're going to consider. He knows how much they flip-flop, right?
Mm-hmm.
He has to take that into consideration. But there's a chance he won't. There's a chance that Kiefer stays loyal to the soil. And even though he is their bestie and not part of the sauce, he may say, you know what, I am part of the Sunsetters and I'm willing to go to the end of it. I just don't even know with these people anymore.
Like they've given him a reason now, like for him to put them up. Like they've already shown
with no like penalties.
Exactly. Like they've given him the reason next time he's in power to put him up. Like you guys considered me, now this is my chance and I'm not going to miss on it. And
yeah. It's like you guys put me up. You were planning on getting me out. I had to convince you guys to let me stay. Yeah. Like there it's clear that you guys don't have loyalty to me. Like, I feel like if it's all about like, oh, I want to be loyal, blah, 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 that's fine. But then when the people you're loyal to betray you, then you can turn around and be like, yeah, I'm going to pull that same card on you guys. It's not about loyalty anymore. Like, I was loyal. You guys weren't. So now I'm returning the favor.
And it's going to look great on Kiefer. Like, he has, mm-hmm. there's no backlash for that. There's no blood on his hands because they made the mistake first. And yeah. they mm-hmm. popped that idea up first. And this is like the overall, this is the most wishy-washiest season I've ever seen. And that's what made it so entertaining. I like, it's amazing.
Yes. Yeah, you really, honestly, you never know what's going to happen. Even after Vito is played, it's like, okay, I have no idea who's going home. No clue.
I was thinking after last week's double, Vic and Rohan, two top players gone. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, okay, the entertainment level might die down a little bit. You know, and now what we get here is a flip-flop. Yeah. On your ally. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So
wild.
Tina has found out that she is going home. So in a similar conversation with Beth, where Beth was kind of like, yeah. And Tina said,
"Oh my sweet merciful God,"
and then proceeded to do nothing.
That's
she packed her bags. That's
she
what
did.
Happened.
She packed her bags. She said, "What are you gonna do?"
That's partly why I was jumping the gun and saying I'm very disappointed in Tina, and she is not fighting when she could easily She could easily sway these guys again and be like, hey, this guy threw all of you under the bus the moment you put him up. He exposed the sunsetters, all that. And she's not even doing that. I don't get it.
Literally, all she needs to do is go to Ty and say, hey, Ty, you know, you could keep me. That's all it would take.
Again. No, honestly, though, like I have to give Kiefer credit, because the easiest thing for him to do would have been like, it's okay, guys. I still, you know, I like you guys as people. I understand this is the move, like, good game. I'm out the door. Like, the decision has been made. It's clear that they want me to go. Like, okay, goodbye. And that would have been easy enough, but he didn't do that. He didn't sit back. He's made this, like, this change, and it's worked. I mean, it, at least you try, and that's what you have to do. And I feel like the opposite is happening with Tina, where it's like she hears the news and she's like, okay, well, then nothing further that can be done.
To be fair, Kiefer did spend the first like day and a half saying, I'm going to leave this game. He said, only two more sleeps until I'm out of here and I don't have to deal with it anymore. Only two more sleeps. And then he was having a conversation with Jed, and I think just like he was like, I mean, I guess I could say, hey, it's better for your game if you keep me. You realize that, right?
Wait, he's receptive? But he still did that.
Whoa. Look,
Tina could do that.
Exactly. She just found out today. She's got another 24 hours before she times out on
Kiefer. But if
she
doesn't do it, I'll be disappointed.
Exactly. Like she even a morning in that house, she can flip the house, especially with a season like this.
Exactly.
She can make it happen. But I hope it's sooner rather than like a last minute thing. And I also, another question, I don't understand how Kiefer, by one conversation with Jed, by his saying, I'm better for you, Jed, how did that convince Beth and Ty that, you know, Kiefer is good to be saying? I don't get it.
Because
it's, make it make
so
sense.
He made the pitch to Jed. He made a pitch to Ty, and Ty just felt really bad about it personally to begin with. Genuinely, which is very easy to convince Ty, in this particular instance, Beth was not on board, but Beth, who has the most influence in the house, kind of just went like, okay, if you guys really want this, then yeah, well, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I think they also rationalized it by saying, oh, we're breaking up Tina and Tara.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But
yeah, and I also think it was a hard decision for them to come to in the first place to say, like, we're going to take him out. And then I think that it was like, oh, we don't have to do this. And there are reasons not to do it. Okay, let's not do it then. Okay, cool. Good, good, good. Wipe the slate clean. We don't have to do it. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like they don't understand. They've already let, you know, the bat out of the cage or whatever the saying is.
Yeah.
I don't know, there's some sort of saying.
so that's where it is. I genuinely think that there's not a 0% chance that Tina does make some kind of pitch tomorrow and changes their mind last minute before Kiefer's able to change their mind again. We'll see. I would not necessarily count Tina completely out yet, but as of right now, it looks like Kiefer will stay, and boy, will they make a meal out of that in the episode, and rightfully so. What a storyline to have this emotional betrayal followed by Kiefer turning it around in the very next episode. I think we're in for some hopefully good stuff here as we move forward into the eviction tomorrow.
Yeah, it's going to be a very entertaining episode, and especially if there's more flip-floppiness, which I know there's, you're saying there's not a 0% chance. I say there's a 5% chance Tina fights, so it's not high. So I think it's going to stay the way it is, and Kiefer is going to look like the greatest of all time, and he's going to have this diary room session that I am the best ever. You betcha.
He's already like... Yeah, I told Jed to put me up in the first place. That's I wanted him to do it.
There was a live feed I watched today where Kiefer's sitting in the bed, and he's just like, he was pumping himself up again today after he convinced those guys, and it was just funny to watch. Like he's like a kid that you see, like he's when he's down and out. When he's up, like he's talking to himself and boosting himself. When really the parents, which is the triangle, are telling him when to go to sleep when it comes down to it. So it's just, I hope it will. I'm starting to like Kiefer now. So.
Why are you here? Hard work. How did you get here? Hard work. What are you here for? God. Hard work. Let me tell you, that lasted like 10 minutes.
Yes.
At least.
I feel like looking in the mirror and being like, you can do this, is very different from like a 10-minute soliloquy about how amazing you are.
It wasn't even a soliloquy this time. It was just hard work, hard work, hard work, hard work. God. Why are you here? Hard work. Always hard work.
Hey, if it works for him, if it works, maybe I should
hard work for him.
I need to pump myself up more.
You knew you were going to be here, and you're here. You don't know why, but you're here.
Why? Because of hard work.
Hard work.
Dedication.
You were gonna quit? You don't quit. You've never quit once in your life. You do hard work.
Oh boy.
Gotta love
I need to start having pump up talks to myself. I didn't realize people do that so much. Kiefer, Beth, everybody. I didn't know.
You know, you don't just drop and start doing some push ups every once in a while?
Nope. But I need to start.
I feel like
maybe I'll
hold
my arms.
Yeah. Like this, it reminds me of as why I mentioned the kid was, you know, there was this viral video once where a kid wakes up every morning and she tells herself, I am strong, I'm smart, I'm beautiful. Like, you know, it's awesome. It's manifestation. It's great. I good for him.
I feel like if you do it, maybe keep it short. Yeah. Short and sweet, just like a quick little like pump up, like, hey, here you go, you got this, you can do this. But you know, the long drawn out stuff is a little much for me, but
not when millions of people are watching.
Yeah, if it works, it works. Who's to argue? It did work, so
it works. All right. Yeah. Well, that's what we have for you tonight. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Any final thoughts, Melissa, on the night?
You know, I feel like we think we know what's going to happen tomorrow, but we have no idea. So I'm very much looking forward to the episode and seeing how things go from here.
All right. Here, any final thoughts?
Yeah, just great episode. And, you know, as Melissa said, yeah, this is very unpredictable. Who knows what's going to happen? But as of right now, I'm hoping Keith stays and then he gets power next week. And I want to see what he does.
All right. Well. Thank you guys so much for joining us again. I will be back tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. Eastern, to update you on everything that happened today on the Big Brother Canada 9 live feeds. Tomorrow during the day, you can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong. We'll be talking about the stock watch and where we go from here with that. Then, of course, later, I'll be live on Twitch again to watch the episode live. And then afterwards, we'll be live to recap the episode. So plenty of Big Brother coverage tomorrow. You can also listen to some Circle coverage. Circle US started on Netflix today. Our first episode recap is up now, that I did with Rob, And episode 2 recap with Bryce Isaiah should be up tomorrow. So make sure you tune in for that one as well. So plenty of content there. Hero, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. First name, last name, 10. Hero, the old 10. So the same everywhere. That's where I'm mainly at. I'm not on TikTok. That's a private account. I just like watching the dance videos here and there. That's it.
All right. And Melissa?
You can find me on all social media at It's Melissa with 3 A's.
All right. And that's what we have for you guys. Do you think we could end this podcast?
Oh, we can't. All right.
Before you do, Andy, I just want to say thank you so much for having me here, because it's always been a pleasure to be talking BB Can with you guys.
Well, thank you, here. It was great having you. I'm really glad we got to hear your thoughts. But that is what we have for you guys. Thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight, and see you all next time.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.